Must tell you there were a few times as we worshiped this morning that I thought of our brothers and sisters in Honduras. They're an hour ahead of us, so they are worshiping this morning as well. There was a time in the bus that we traveled in, a sort of an oversized van, sat I think about 25 or 30 people, and we went everywhere in that, and we sang. And this was one of the songs we sang. Very cool. There were tears. Just as there are tears this morning. It's really true. It's really true. I want to thank you for praying for our team. And most of you know that I ate something or drank something. And I was laid low for one of the days. A little over a day of our trip. And it felt like a lifetime. And yet, I wasn't freaked out. I was with the Lord. And I laid in my hammock part of the day out on the porch in our little, not sure what we call those yet, sort of gazebo deal thing, place where we stayed. And so I listened to music and I listened to praise music. I'm not going to sound too holy here. I listened to Les Miserables because I felt like that. On my iPod, miserable, and but along the way, God really met me there, and I could feel your prayers, and I recovered quickly. I was warned that you got to just drink Gatorade like crazy. You're terribly dehydrated, and along with whatever bug I ingested, and But I was warned, you're going to hate Gatorade by the time this is over. And I'm on a campaign against Gatorade now. I hate Gatorade. I drank gallons of it, I tell you. But I'm better. So thanks for your prayers. Brian Wiggs, who's our missionary in Honduras, along with his wife, Natasha, and their kids, Michael and Brian James, they're mostly in the Tegucigalpa area, which is the capital city where we flew in and out of. But no sooner had we landed than the bus took us on a seven-hour, I think, bus trip to a very remote part of the country called Gracias Limpira, which is, for some reason blanked. I didn't remember well. 10 years ago when I led a team from our church there, happened to be the same road, literally, same town, and then the same mountain road that took us up right past the church that we built 10 years ago. Grace Point, and I flipped out. I just went nuts. And some of you were around at that time, and I remember dredging by hand along with Ted and Brenda, dredging sand out of the river. You don't call sand and gravel and they drop you a load. You dredge it yourself. And some of us can carry a lot at one time, right? Ted, the pile is still there 10 years later. I want you to know. I went nuts. But here's the really cool thing. As we drove by this church, of course, we stopped, and word started traveling in the bus that, you know, this is where we built this church in a place called Carmelite, is how I remember it. It's Camalote, but Carmelite works for me. So, and... And I have chills telling you about this, that there were a dozen people, 20 people back then. There's 100 now that call that church their home. And it's fully used. And here's the really amazing part, just so you feel connected, I don't know, 3, 4, 5,000 miles away. That church is a daughter church of the church in this town, Gracias. They just are building churches in the mountain roads. Under the leadership of one of our missionaries here at Grace Point, Victor and Virgilia, I'm not saying that quite right. It was Virgilia, close? I think it's Virginia, really? No, it's not. We'll stick with Virgilia. Okay, so the Almendares, and they've planted 25 churches. All right, and so the church we went this time to build is a daughter church of that and a sister church of ours. In fact, we worshiped there, and I preached in that church last week. And on the door, as you came in, it's something Iglesia conservative baptizo or something like that. And it's a sister church of ours, folks. I mean, 25 of them, right? So it's impact. This is strategic. This isn't just go and have a good time and be, you know, have a significant time. There is great connections going on there and great fruit. 25 churches. One last footnote, and we'll get into the word. As we crossed, we used to cross it through the river. There was no place except this mountain road goes right through a river, and we had to get out and push our bus through it. This time, there's a bridge. Even though I tried to talk them to go through the river like real people, you know, we did 10 years ago. But and God's just doing great things there. So, gloria a Dios, right? That's it. When I grew up, wanting to please my parents. I know that comes as a shock to some of you. but I did. I grew up knowing what would make them happy, and for the most part, knowing what would make them sad. I grew up knowing what would cause them to smile and cause them to frown. Maybe you know the same with your parents. Everybody show me a look of happy right now. Okay? And that's a look that you show your child when they're making you happy. And show me the look of sad and or mad even. All right? So you know the feeling. Well, some of you know, most of you know that I'm a PK, which means preacher's kid. And that means, church kids sometimes, preacher's kids sometimes can be a bit unsupervised. It was true of my brother and sister, for sure. Add to that the fact that not only was my father preaching, but in those days there was a choir, and my mother sang in the choir. So it was like, freedom! You know, that hurt. Okay, so lots of freedom as a kid. My dad understood this and realized that in the middle of a message, he can't stop and go, look, pal, I'm tired of it. Right? He had to come up with a little more subtle approach. So he devised the finger method, where if I was unruly and distracting or disturbing people near me, he would place a finger on his cheek, indicating one swat when we got home. And it was a pretty good-sized church, and there was a balcony in it, and it didn't matter where you sat, you could see the finger on his cheek when it appeared. And on occasions, when we were extra distracting and disturbing to people around us, there were two fingers on the cheek. One particular Sunday, and I don't recall misbehaving this particular Sunday, but my father was deep in thought, and he cupped his face like this. When I had packed my bags after church to move out and run away, I thought for sure I was had, and it's time to move out. It's time to live on your own, son. But it was a mistake. I avoided him, I must confess, the rest of the day. I have three children, 18, 16, and 14-year-olds. Three of them, teenagers. And they, just like me, most of the time want to please me. That's a good thing. They know what it takes to make me happy, and they also have a pretty good sense what makes me frown and sad or mad. Did you know that the Bible tells us in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 10, find out what it is that pleases the Lord? Let me put that in terms that are connected to what I'm describing to you this morning. find out what it takes to see him smile. Fair enough? Now, that's an invitation, by the way. It's not just a command. It's sort of enticing, isn't it? I mean, if you hear those words, Ephesians 5:10, you immediately start thinking, maybe scratching your head, wonder what I need to do to see him smile. Assuming you're motivated and you're interested in seeing him smile, well, then how do I do that? So let me ask it as a question. How can you and I know what pleases God? Any quick responses before we look at one that comes right out of the Bible? I'll show you an answer that he gives us in his word. It's not the only answer, but it's a good one and one to take with us today. Okay. Those that love me will obey me. So there's a. It's not just talking it and saying it, it's showing it through our obedience. Any other want to? What we just did. We worshiped. I don't know. Sometimes I think it's probably a good thing, Norm, to imagine the look on his face when he hears your voice and, more importantly, knows your heart, that you're captured by him. We sang, the worship team led us in the wonderful song, Enough. He's enough. And Pastor John prompted us to say, is he enough? Because if he is, I got to guess, there it is again, the smile appears. My Bible's open to Jeremiah this morning, chapter 17. If you would find your way there. I want to show you from his word, one of the answers he gives us to the question, how can we know what pleases God? Jeremiah 17, I apologize, I don't have the page number. Do you, somebody have it from the chair Bible? 548. Page 548, if you didn't bring your own Bible this morning, you'll be open to the same section here. While you're heading there, let me just tell you, Jeremiah was a prophet in the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom had already been taken over by Assyria. The southern kingdom was holding on, but fading fast. It was in a steep, slippery decline morally. Jeremiah is a prophet that spanned the last four kings in the southern kingdom, and there was quite understandably a panic in his voice. Because he saw it slipping away. And there was very little he could do to stop it. Though he was given, you and I would say today, an impossible assignment. To warn, to plead, to beg, to weep. All of the above, as it turns out, in vain. Because in 586, the Babylonians crushed them. Devastating Jerusalem and packing its people away in what's known as the Babylonian captivity. Terrible, terrible time. Earning him the label, the weeping prophet. Pretty good chance Jeremiah didn't smile a whole lot in his career. It spanned from about 40 years. And he pleaded and he begged and he saw very little result. Some would say this is a time today that we live in that parallels in America some of what was going on there. A steep decline. A slippery slope south. And in the midst of this, Jeremiah the prophet contrasts two people. Those who please God and those who don't. And he calls the one group in this chapter cursed. You could probably assume those are the ones that don't please God. And the other one he calls blessed. Now, as I read about these two people that are contrasted here, I want you to examine yourself. I want you to really ask yourself this morning, Which is more like me? Don't make it a broad, sweeping statement, and certainly don't answer it for your spouse or your family member. Don't do that. Do it for yourself. Evaluate yourself based on, let's call this a template this morning, okay? Beginning in verse 5, Jeremiah makes it perfectly clear, this is what the Lord said. That's how he begins. This is what the Lord says, and he profiles, first of all, the attributes of the cursed man, the one who does not see God's smile. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who depends on flesh for his strength, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. He's looking on the inside now. He will be like a bush in the wastelands. He will not see prosperity when it comes. He will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. And in contrast, he begins verse 7 to talk about the man that gets to see, or the woman that gets to see God's smile. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. He will be like a tree planted by the water, sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green, and it has no worries in the year of drought, and never fails to bear fruit. Let's pause for a second. Let's get some of the features that are given to us here. I don't have an outline for you this morning, so if you feel free, you can write all over your bulletin. But attributes, let's start there of this cursed man that's profiled in verse 5. What are they? Just help me with them real quick. What's the first thing? Trust in man in contrast to trusting in God, okay? So this person trusts people, not God. That will not earn a smile on God's face. Your trust is in the wrong place, or more specifically, the wrong people. Let's go on. What else does it say about this person? He depends on flesh for his strength. More specifically, his own. He, we would say, is a very self-sufficient, self-reliant, I don't need help, thank you very much kind of person. I can cover it myself. It's a person that likes to say, you know how I got where I got? Because I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. It's very American, don't you think? Tell you how I got here. Busted it to get here. That's how I got here. So he's very self-reliant. And then he goes and pries a little bit further in verse 5. What else is true of this person that does not see God smile? His heart turns away from the Lord. This guy's got a heart problem too, doesn't he? It goes deep, in other words. This is not just superficial stuff. This person's heart is in the wrong place. He turns away from the Lord. And according to verse 6, what's the outcome of this person, this cursed person? Well, it's not pretty, right? I mean, verse 6 is not a very pleasant description at all. For starters, he is compared to a bush in the wastelands. You'll see a contrast in a minute to the blessed man. But this cursed person, like a bush in the wastelands. I'm going to guess someplace east of the Dalles. All right, no offense. I love it dry and all that stuff, but it's pretty barren. And we say barren what? Wasteland. And you don't see a ton of trees. In fact, it's weird. You, flying in the other day, you notice again, I'm telling some people that are from Arkansas who are sitting next to me. And they're so used to, see my hand? Flat. That's Arkansas. Okay? And I said, you guys are in for a real treat. What you're seeing here, that's Hood River. That's where the ESPN, windsurfing capital, all this, there's always wind there. still brown. Everything's brown. And then you come to just about Multnomah Falls, and whammo, it all changes. And you go from barren wasteland to lush and green. And I mean, this gal, I mean, her husband is 6'6", sitting next to me. I'm 6'3". I told him as we started to fly home from Houston, I said, "You realize there's 9 foot of human flesh in two seats? No wonder we're crowded." But anyway, they're so excited to see they look out and they go, "There's a thing." I said, "That's called Mount Rainier, you know." I mean, they don't have that. But it's impressive. Anybody, I don't care where you live, knows the difference between bushes, right? A bush in the wasteland and trees that decorate a mountain and forests. Let me ask this question after you look again at verse 6. He doesn't see prosperity when it comes. He dwells in parched places of the, there it is again, the desert, salt land where no one lives. Is God smiling at this person? Let me make it more personal. Do you have any interest in being this person? I can't imagine anybody saying, "Sure, sign me up. Somebody's got to live there." No, of course not. Before you conclude, "Well, that's not me," save that for just a minute. Save your conclusion. And let's look at the attributes of the other person here that begin in verse 7. You help me again. What are the attributes of this blessed man, the one who sees God smile? So he's a man or woman who trusts in the Lord. Do you see this on a daily basis? I know you do. I do. There wasn't a hospital near me in Gracias that I knew of. I mean, there, you had to trust God. Here, well, we got St. Jude, St. V, St. whatever. We got all the St. hospitals nearby. And it's less pronounced. It doesn't scold you or me for living here. It just means sometimes it's easy to not trust in the Lord. What else is true of this man, though, that sees God smile? Where's his confidence? It's in the Lord, isn't it? It's in the Lord. Let me interrupt myself for a second and tell you, according to Psalm 20, that every generation has its things that it places its trust in. Every people group has that. I asked Hondurans this question, thinking this will be an interesting thing. You know what some of their answers were? "We trust in soccer." Hey, they were in the World Cup too. Big deal there. Some said glue. Shoe glue that they inhale to kill the pain of living there. Some of you on the team, do you remember some of their other answers? Cell phones, that was interesting. "We trust in cell phones." They've leapfrogged. They don't have landlines for the most part, so everybody's got it. Here you're in the jungle in primitive conditions, and they got cell phones. Sorry. All right, so my point is, every person has an answer to this question. What do you trust in? Psalm 20 says, in those days, some trust in horses. The bigger the horse, the more confident you were. Some trust in chariots. The bigger the wheels, the more sleek, the more certain you were, the more confident you were in your hardware here. Some trust in medicine. What are some things we trust in? Put our confidence in. Jobs. Got my job. Oh. What's something else related to the job? Money. Retirement accounts. It's probably the biggest one for Americans. So we all trust in different things. There's no question there. But this blessed man, we're told, trusts in the Lord. His confidence in the Lord. And did you notice this? I love this in verse 8. Don't miss this. The outcome of this person, he'll be like, not a bush, a tree planted by the water. Sends out its roots. That's good stuff. By the stream. And notice, does not fear. Everybody circle the word if you're into circling words in the Bible. It's an important word. Does not fear when heat comes. What does that tell you about the blessed person? Problem free? No pain? God's got you covered and you won't have to deal with difficulty? No. He says, when it happens, not if, when heat comes. Notice it has no worries in a year of drought. Drought will come. Is it reminding you of Matthew 7 when Jesus says, you know something? There's Matthew 5 earlier in the Sermon on the Mount. God causes the sun to rise on the righteous and the unrighteous. And in fact, the wise man who builds his house on the rock or the sand, both of those people, the wise or the foolish man, face the same kind of calamities. The winds came, the waters rose, the rains pounded. So you're not free from those kinds of things. But your confidence is in him, which means when heat comes, when worries potentially come to visit you because there's a drought of some kind in your life, you're steady because your confidence is in him. So which person are you today? It's a question I started with. I'm going to guess this. Most of us hearing these words this morning want to be the second person, the blessed man, right? The blessed woman. Are you? Who doesn't want to live near water, he says. Who doesn't want to have deep roots and bear fruit? Who doesn't want that? I can't imagine passing on that. And who doesn't want to be fear-free? It's his description. Who doesn't want to be worry-free? I don't chew my nails. I have nothing to chew them about. Because I trust in God. My confidence is in him. Who of us doesn't want to be the person profiled in verse 8? So which person are you? I'm saying take a snapshot of today and how you're living based on these descriptions. May I plead with you, don't be too quick with your answer. And don't close your Bible yet. Because there's a warning in verse 9 that we didn't read yet. And there's an offer in verse 10 that you and I badly need. The warning, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Why would he say that? Why would Jeremiah be told by God, put this there? Profile the human heart right now. Except that you and I are inclined to say, I'm not the cursed guy. I'm the blessed guy. Can you almost hear the Holy Spirit saying, hold on. Not so quick. Don't give yourself a pass so fast. The aha moment in this comes in verse 10. I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind to reward a man according to his conduct, according to what his deeds deserve. Here's the moment. You need and I need help to correctly assess our hearts. This is not just an intellectual conversation. This is heart stuff. And based on verse 9 that says, your heart is very tricky, and so is mine, very capable of giving me a clean slate, all clear. The reality is verse 10, God says, you know something? After assessing your heart that it's pretty deceitful above all things, and who can understand it? Because it can't be fixed. The promise, the offer, verse 10. I'm here to help. I will help you correctly assess your heart. That's what I want us to do. As you close your Bible this morning and close your eyes as well. I'm pretty sure you want to live your life as I do. To see him smile. And I'm also fairly certain that it's easy for us to say, well, that's happening. Will you do the daring thing right now? It's uncomfortable. But will you say, God, even though I want to be the blessed man, is there an area in my life that causes me to fall short of that? And please listen to me. If the answer is, yes, you're trying to be good on your own. You don't have my son in your heart. That's where it begins. To say, Jesus, I need you inside of me. Because there's dirt there. I cover it up pretty well. I dress it up. But it's there. Will you ask him? If he doesn't live inside of you right now, will you ask him, Jesus? I can't get clean. And therefore will not be the blessed man without you. So I'm asking you to come inside of me and scrub me clean by forgiving me for the dirt that you call sin, cleansing me completely. And then help me to live according to the words we've heard this morning, where I trust you. And live to see you smile.